Accession number 18839, Reel 1.
This is an interview with Mr. G. Fulks, who is a veteran of both Dunkirk and the D-Day landings, recorded by Rodney Giesler in Wootton Bassett, Wiltshire, on the 19th of May 1999, for the Imperial War Museum Sound Archive. Right. When were you born, Geoffrey?
31st of August, 1918. Uh-huh. So I've actually been in two wars, actually. 2 months old when the first one finished.
And whereabouts was that?
In Wolverhampton, in the near Birmingham, you know, Wolverhampton, where I was born. As I say, lived there till, well, actually, late on, but... to go back to when I joined up, well, it's 1939. In July 1939, I had was forming then what they call a militia. If you remember, if you recall history, in during 1939, they knew war was coming, so they started training people, men up to the age of 21 years for 6 months training. I had a calling of papers in July 1939 to report on September 15th, 1939, because I was birthday was on the 31st of August, so actually war broke out 3 days after my 21st birthday. So instead of being in for the 6 month training, which I was expected to have in when I was paying for it in July, it finished up by being 6 years. So I reported to Aldershot on September 15th. My first night in the army was spent on the floor of the gymnasium at Aldershot. We had one night there. Then during the following day, we were marched down to the station for on train to Beaufort Camp, where we went for my 6 month train, well, 6 weeks training. All the inoculations, and because at 21, this was quite a experience to me. I'd never been much away from home at the time.
And what sort of job did you have before you joined?
I was a solicitor's clerk. So they, when you went to Beaufort, they set a series of what they call trade tests to see what they want to allocate it. So in view of that, they allocated me to the clerical section of the Royal Army Service Corps. And I was more or less in that during the war, throughout the war, which involved actually the actual management of the supplies and transport within the army, you know, the actual convoys and the actual getting the supplies up to the troops in the field. That was the actual idea. We were there. I stayed there. We finished our training towards Christmas, and I was allocated to three corps headquarters. And they moved down to a little place called Alresford. Alresford.
Alresford, yes.
In near Hampshire, I think. And we stayed there till we embarked for France in February 1940. First of all, I mean, there were several rumours where we were supposed to go. I think in the waiting time, we were supposed to be going, we sort of, rumours were going to go to Finland. You know, the Finnish, Germany invaded Finland about December or January time. Then apparently we went over to France, to the BEF, as they used to say, the book of England forgot.
never heard it called that before.
And so we went, the first active place we set up station was in a place called Bethune. I think it was quite a popular place during the last war, if I remember rightly. The first war, you know. And then followed about a few weeks of what they call the phony war, as it was on then, until May 1940, when the balloon went up, as they said, in those days. And we went more or less into Belgium, over the border into Belgium. Near a place called Plugstert. They call it Plugstreet, I think, during the Great War. It was quite...
Over all the old battlefields, really.
Yeah. We were there about one or two nights, and I remember there was ominous things. I mean, the refugees started pouring down, for one thing, you know. So I think we were about there about, probably 2 or 3 days, and that was it. We started retreating, basically. We went back into Belgium, into France, rather. And from then it was chaos. We didn't know where we were going, you know, moving here, moving there. Within a week or two, just set in. We more or less falling back towards Dunkirk. The actual chaos on the road with the refugees was so chaotic, they decided to abandon the transport. We destroyed what we could, and had to foot slug to the Dunkirk.
How far were you from Dunkirk?
Well, put it this way, I estimated between 15 to 20 miles. I don't know, because it was a full day's foot slug. It was full pack, rifle, and being... all I remember is they said follow the line, there was a canal on the right-hand side, and that took you more or less into Dunkirk. Outskirts of Dunkirk, and that was horrendous, because we had to dive for cover, because they were machine gunning, bombing the road, or shelling, whatever it is, and we had to dive for cover when the planes came. So we were actually being attacked before we got to Dunkirk itself. We arrived at a place just outside Dunkirk, and they started sorting us out, and they selected one or two units to form regard. And the next morning we went down to the beaches and to line up on the beaches to wait, transport back to England. And that I shall never forget, because it was a lovely spring day, you know, sunshine, full, and that stretch of water between you. And then the Stugas came over, dive bombing, long lines. However, they managed to miss most of it, I don't know.
Because you weren't dug in for any protection, were you?
No, all you could do, basically, when you heard the scream, you know, you just got down onto the sand and hoped for the best, you see. And they more or less dropped yards away from me, actually. I don't know why. Because there's such a thin line, well, two or three thin lines, you see. They did hit, obviously, some of them. Got sections, must have got hit, you see. And eventually, I think we were there most of that day. I was lucky. I didn't spend a night on there. Unfortunately, towards dusk, towards evening, we started to move towards, I suppose, what it was then was what they call a mole, I suppose. It was a sort of jetty. As far as my vision of Dunkirk, all I remember, basically, was the old oil storage camp in the distance, you know, where in the centre of Dunkirk, a pall of smoke over the old place. And I got onto the actual jetty, as they call it, and started... forming, and we got onto a boat on the right-hand side of the jetty. They've been on there about 10 minutes, that's all. And then Stukas came over again, and they must have dive-bombed the ship. But one of the bombs just missed the side of the boat, and I felt it lift up. And the next thing was abandoned ship at the jetty. So I got off, Sellers got off the boat, back onto the jetty, started to go run back towards the beach. And I heard somebody shouting, jump, jump. And there was a trawler just casting off on the opposite side. And Sellers jumped. The ones that jumped before me were on the sort of prow of the ship, landed on the foredeck. So for me, it was just sort of gliding by, and I could see the deck coming up about 15 to 20 feet below, and I hit the deck, slapped bang on my feet. And the matlow picked me up. He said, "We want," remember his words, "we want to want that, don't we, when you finish knocking holes in it." And I was, the pain in my legs shut, and they took me down to berth below, and on the, it was underneath the Beaufort's gun on the ship, and they got out into the ocean, into the channel, and then night came, and you could hear the planes overhead, and I think they had to steam up and down the zigzag up and down the channel for some time, all through the night practically. And you could hear these planes over, and somebody shouted to the both, "Don't open the fire, I don't open the fire unless they were attacked, you see." And
was this trawler full of men at this time?
Well, I don't know. There was must have been some on the open decks, because I was down below, because I was injured, basically. So
you've broken both legs, haven't
you? I hadn't broken them. I thought I had, but I thought at the time I had, but I was lying on the bunk, and there must have been several on the open decks at the time. It's so vague, you know. I was in so much pain with the ankles. Both ankles were sort of swelling up badly. And,
can you give me, if I can just interrupt you a second, can you give me an idea of the time scale? You took a whole day to reach Dunkirk.
Yes.
And then presumably you spent a night when you reached it.
Yes.
And then the next day you got on this boat.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that's right. That's as far as I can remember.
So you were taken off fairly
fairly quickly, yes.
Compared to the others who were.
Yes, I think actually I thought afterwards, I've seen on the television about this mole that they didn't find out till later. I must have been lucky when they discovered they could get ships into this mole area where we were, you see. Because some earlier on, they'd been sort of swimming out to the boats, you know, to try to get aboard the boats lying out to sea. But
were there many boats lying offshore when you got to the mole?
Not many. During the day, when we were waiting, you know, to get on, there was one or two did leave the mole, and it was actually I saw one leave the mole and steam out, and they only got about half a mile or so, and it was bombed, and you could see it going down. It just sank.
Directed
on the ship. Always remember, that's the one thing I actually see down, and there wasn't that many. I didn't see many of they call the little ships, as they say. That was probably early on, I don't know, but all I can remember vaguely, going back, was the fact that there was one or two ships out there, but and one or two coming in from the other side, I suppose, basically. Where this trawler came from, I don't know, but it just happened to get in there and get back out.
Mm-hmm. So when did you actually get back to England?
I think it was June the 1st, I think, if I remember the date.
Was that the next day?
The next day, yes. Yeah.
What sort of reception did you have when you got there?
I know, that is, to my amazement, I didn't know what was going on, because we entrained. Actually, And
where did you get that land? In Folkestone? Or?
Folkestone, and I think it's Folkestone. And then we got and trained there, and all through the countryside, every town we passed through, they're waving flags. And I thought, "What? This is a retreat, not a, no, as if it was a victory, you know." And I suppose, in a way, it was. But it amazed me that people so cheering and so, after all what had happened, and it was something, you know.
Had you had anything to eat from the from? During all this time that you took
your turn? Only what we got, iron ration,
corned beef
and stuff, you see.
And when you got on the train to go back, up to London, I suppose, did you, or where?
No, actually, we skirted around London and finished up somewhere around Hereford, I think it was. Meanwhile, of course, they wanted to put me onto an ambulance train, which I was helped off the boat by one of my pals. I could just about sort of struggle along. The ankles had swollen up badly, and I just went, when I got to the camp, I just got into the sick bay, basically, you know, and I had to lie up for a few days, well, several days, until the ankles went. It's amazing I didn't break both my legs or ankles, but when my boots were taken off, you can tell the condition the feet were in, because with going through the heat of a day, 2 or 3 days without in the heat, and your socks without being washed, and all the dye had come out. Actually, onto your feet, they were just like done like brown. You actually brown from the dye in the leather, I suppose.
And during your journey, were you well looked after? Were you fed and rested? And
oh yes, yes, amazingly, they looked after us well. You know, that treated like, as I say, like heroes.
Did you have a square meal given you?
Actually, in England, everything was laid on fine. You know, but. And then we got into this camp, and I was lying in a tent for a bit, and then I think I wasn't able to do much for a few days, because it's funny, it going back such a long time, you just can't remember little details, or only the things that stand out in your mind. And what I remember particularly was when, I think on the first Sunday that we were in this sick bay camp, as it's called, a padre came up and said, "I don't care what denomination you are, if you feel you want to take Holy Communion, I'm willing to give it to you, you know." I think he wasn't a Church of England, I think he was one of the parties. He says, "Provide you come in the right spirit." And that's, I'd never taken communion in my life before. I've never baptized. I was baptized in the Church of England, but never to confirmation class. Because I was told it was quite a sin not to you couldn't take communion unless you'd been confirmed. And, because I couldn't, at that time, I didn't think that was necessary. But, so that's how it came to be, to give thanks for, you know, being...
Your survival.
Survival. Mm. Mm.
What about your injuries? Had you badly sprained your legs?
Badly sprained, I suppose. I could walk after death, but they were... It was not necessarily the ankle so much, it was actually the base of the heel. It was terribly bruised, you know. But as I say, it was quite a fall. And I just landed on my feet, as I thought, more or less flat on my feet, and fell forward a bit. And then I couldn't get up at the time, so they just took me down below. It's only a small boat, very quite small, you know. All I remember is it's got the old both the gun and the prow. It took quite a few got off that particular boat when it got into Folkestone.
So when you recovered from your injuries, you went back to your old job of clerking, did you, with the transport?
Well, we reformed what was left of Three Corps headquarters, because I think the Corps headquarters strength was around about 300, I think, the actual full strength. So went out to France, and I think we had 100 and... I didn't get the exact figures, but I reckon it was about 100 didn't either make it or were taken prisoner. You know. Then we... That had been 1940. Then we moved... We moved up to North Wales then for a short time. We went on various exercises in England. And then we moved to Northern Ireland. We went up to Stranraer, Convert, and got, I think it would be 1941. Anyhow, we went to Stranraer and across to Larne, and we had to stay in Larne that first night. Convoy had to line up on the docks in Larne because Belfast was on its first raid of the war. It was actually only incendiaries that created a heck of a lot of chaos. You know, Belfast wouldn't be used to having air raids, and I think a lot of them panicked and left the city because they haven't got the ARP organisation that they should have. And now, so I spent about a year or two, I suppose, in Ireland.
Doing the same job of organising transport.
Yes. Mm. And various exercises went on. One exercise we went up near Londonderry and almost went over the border. Somebody wasn't particularly good at map reading. The first thing we could see was some lights on in the village, blazing away. No blackout, of course, in Southern Ireland. So they had to beat a hasty retreat back over to the border again. But nobody noticed, I don't think. But even then, you know, even then, you got that anti-British feeling. I mean, the Falls Road was out of bounds. Then, you know, I think the one occasion a lorry did get over the and two vehicles did go up the Falls Road, and they got bricks thrown at them then. You know, that's during wartime.
Of course, Londonderry was a naval escort base, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
At that time. Mm. And presumably the units you were with were there to garrison.
Yeah, garrison the area. So. Mm. And
can I just go back to 1940 again, when you first went over to France?
Yes.
The period of the so-called phony war.
Yes.
Now, presumably, the front-line units, were they dug in on the German border, or what?
No. They just... mean the old trenches?
Yeah, I mean, did they sort of take up defensive positions in Belgium and France, like they did at the beginning of the First War?
I don't think so. Not any prepared position. They just went more into... You see, the actual... Blitzkrieg started through the Low Countries, didn't it? And they started to come down, and the British the Three Corps went into to actually what armour they haven't got much any of. They haven't got any armour or anything like that, any armoured brigade or anything like that. It's just more or less infantry people to take up what an anti-tank guns. I've got those, but I mean...
The old two-pounders.
Yes, but...
What were your feelings at the time? Did you think that this phony period couldn't last, that there was going to be an attack sometime? Were you told to expect a big attack sometime?
I suppose so. I think it was generally felt that something would happen. And of course, when it did happen, I think the historians will say the mistake they went to is to go forward into Belgium, because then apparently we were cut off from the rear, you know, molests. I think Hitler gambled on three corps of the British moving forward, and of course the, as the French were on the Maginot side, they came round, didn't they, basically.
Because it's still a bit of a mystery why the Germans held off Dunkirk for so long, because they could have occupied it, couldn't they?
Well, I'd have thought so, really. But,
I mean, what was, did they think that the troops wouldn't escape and they'd come back for them later, or what?
I don't really know. The only thing is whether they'd overstretched their... I think a lot of the actual damage was caused with the speed of their armoured columns, basically. And I suppose their lines of communication were too stretched. I don't. That's the only thing I think of.
Well, Blitzkrieg means lightning war. Anyway,
yeah, that's yeah. That's the idea. But as I say, the only thing that we did worry us. Well, not worry, but I mean it was didn't get over. In fact, while we were when we were being dive bombed by the Stukas, but where's the RAF? Where's the RAF, you see? And I've had to talk to Harold about this. He said, well, of course, they were taking actions beyond Dunkirk. This is probably what they were being bombed us about. I don't know, but they were kept... I suppose their fighters were kept in reserve. I don't know, but we... It would have been a time to have seen some action in the air at Dunkirk, which we didn't get, basically, you know.
So just you spent, what, the next couple of years in Northern Ireland, did you?
Yes, and then we came back to England and we started doing training. Several exercises. We went on an assault course, one or two assault courses, you know, get us fit, I suppose, for what was coming. And then, being sort of clerical, I was allocated to the planning, Montgomery's planning staff, and I went to Ashley Gardens in Kensington, where we worked on
Which gardens?
Ashley Gardens.
Ashley Gardens, yeah.
It's Kensington, I think, isn't it?
Is it? Yeah.
In these flats, we like these flats.
What rank were you then?
Corporal then. And then I was promoted sergeant when we went over to the Normandy landing. Well, that was actually the job, the biggest job and the most well kept secret of the war, because I mean we were told what we would be working on. Loading charts, all the figures involved in moving the army.
Did you know it's going to be Normandy?
No. Uh-huh. We knew it was somewhere somewhere. They didn't even say it was going to be Cali or anything. It just said, but we'd never. Well, I never saw any maps. that is closely guarded secret. No. We're told to keep our tongues.
So you had to make sure that there are enough trucks to get supplies down to the coast.
Yeah, and also actually not just that, the actual logistics in what could be carried in each vehicle, you know, it's a sort of all the... We haven't got computers then to work it all out. It all had to be done with basic figures, I suppose, you know.
And things like tanks.
It all had to be planned, didn't it? And of course everything was marked top secret and secret and so. But we're told that what we're involved in this up there, we'd be part of with Second Army headquarters, you know, the old blue cross on white shield, and there for a time, and then we started forming up. We went down to a place near Southampton, Portsmouth, sorry, to a place, Fort Burgoyne, I think it was. It was on top of the cliffs overlooking the channel.